Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. On this Tuesday, October the 31st, 2023, joining me in studio is Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And in Kansas City is our good friend, Ray Pritchard.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Doing good, Ray. Weather report from Kansas City is what?
It's 29 degrees, and tonight going down to an unreasonable 22 degrees. So, you know, we were, it seems just a few weeks ago, we were complaining about the heat. Well, the heat has disappeared.
Right.
And it's, how's the weather in Tupelo?
So, it's, I think you call what we had in October an Indian summer, right?
Well, Indian summer, yeah.
In other words, summer's extended by a few weeks. Let's see here. It's 43 degrees right now.
All right.
And
all right.
It says fair.
Yes.
Is it fair is. Out there, Fred?
It's a beautiful day, actually. Blue sky, gorgeous sun.
It's like summer for Fred.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Ray, what do you got for the weekend? Weekend here is 74 and sunshine, 78 and sunshine.
Let's see. It's going to be 60, 63, and 56. So, compared to what it is right now.
Right.
Quite an improvement.
Still not bad. Not bad.
No, no.
What's the coldest you've ever ridden your bicycle?
9 degrees. I rode in Chicago when there was snow and ice and 9 degrees. One of the dumber things I've ever done.
He was a younger
man. Preparation.
Yeah, was that 30 years ago?
Yeah, about like that, about 30 years ago. When I thought I could do that. Is preparation for that later accident I was going to have on the bike trail, right?
You know? Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Well, it is fall is here for most of the country now, I guess, officially, although I don't look forward to winter.
No.
After fall means winter will be here before long.
And don't forget this weekend, I believe.
Yeah.
Turn your clocks back.
Yeah, makes life worse.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
Well, at least this is the good one. Was it fall back in fall?
Fall back in the fall.
That just makes the election season 1 hour longer.
I tried to look this up. I didn't try. I did. I looked this up over the weekend. Why do we have daylight savings time?
I think the genesis of it would help the farmers during the harvest season.
Right. Right.
That's what I've heard.
Help them how? You're cutting an hour of daylight off of them.
It just gives the farmers a little bit more daylight time. I'm not advocating for this.
Right.
I'm an advocate for
you had nothing to do
leave
with
it the way it is.
Okay,
well,
Ray,
and I agree with you, Fred. You do away with this. Just pick one.
Yeah.
Pick one and
pick
let's
one.
Go with it, right?
Yeah.
Got my vote.
I don't know. When I leave the office at 5 or 4:30 or whatever and it's dark already, that's just downright depressing.
Yeah. I may have an answer to the why do we have
okay, this. Bring it on. Bring.
According to foxweather.com, the real goal of daylight saving time is to move the hours of human activity to make the best use of daylight. And they're quoting a computer scientist and author of something called Seize the Daylight. I'll share the link.
Well, I'm thinking about running for president on this issue alone.
There's not enough. So the more candidates, the merrier.
I think we need to leave it alone and leave the extra hour of daylight that we have.
Yeah.
So I don't like.
I think Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, has been talking about this every year.
Yeah.
He talks about this and he's been trying to get a law passed, but I don't think there's much support.
Maybe we can get Matt Gaetz.
You already got shorter days, right? Because
right.
the tilt of the Earth.
Right.
But
you can't change that, right?
No, although there was some Democrat lawmaker. Remember a few years ago, he thought Guam tilted, depending on how many people were on which side
of it. Hank Johnson of Georgia.
Hank. Anyway, no, you're right, though, Ray. We learned in our science classes in fourth grade that we could have nothing to do with the tilt of the Earth. But you're already losing daylight, so then you cut another hour off. You're down to dark at 5.
You know, I have, as I've shared on this program, I've tried to listen to and watch things from the 70s, which is before I was born, to brush up on my history.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the first Superman film, and I had seen it before when I was a kid, but never really paid that much attention to it. Towards the end, and spoiler alert, the movie's 45 years old.
Come on, so. Christopher Reeve?
Yes.
Okay.
At one point, to save Lois's life, he goes out to outer space and then turns the planet to try to reverse time. That's nice. Scientific right there.
Nice.
And that's true love, too, you got to say.
It was.
Huh? Right, that's
I teared
true
up a
love.
Little bit. And then I listened to Carpenters, and I
you're was going to go. You're going to go to that length to prove your love. I got to give it up to you there.
That's right.
All right. So, a lot to talk about today on the program. If you want to watch, you can watch on three ways. You can watch on our live video streaming service, streaming.afa.net. Just go to streaming.afa.net. That's our live video streaming service, and you can watch there. You can also go to YouTube. What is it, Brent? You tell us every day.
They search for Today's Issues live stream.
Today's Issues live stream on YouTube. Today's Issues live stream on YouTube. And then Facebook Live. Facebook Live, Today's Issues, we're there. And we post the stories that we discuss there on our Facebook page. Facebook, Today's Issues, you can you can watch there. One other thing before we get into the news of the day. We've got our 2024 Spiritual Heritage Tours planned. And so if you want to look into that, you want to go on a vacation with a purpose, so to speak, we're going in June and we're going in September. And there's two separate trips. There's, those are two separate trips, June and September. But what I mean is we go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. And then we go to Washington, D.C. and George Washington's Mount Vernon. Those are two separate trips. But we do them back-to-back for those who fly in or drive in from farther parts of the country who want to spend a week with us seeing everything that those towns and cities I just listed. So much rich history in Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, of course, the first permanent English settlement in the New World, and Yorktown, where really Yorktown is where the Battle of Yorktown decided the war for independence, basically, and we wouldn't be here had the Battle of Yorktown taken place, most likely. So, if you want information on those trips, cost, itinerary, everything, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com. They're hosted by my wife, Allison, and yours truly, and then my sons, Walker and Wesley, and Stephen and Beth McDowell of the Providence Foundation. So we carry a historian with us on these tours who gives talks, answers questions, the who, when, why, and what of all the places we'll see along the way there on those trips. So spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information on the 2024 tours. All right, Chris, what's the first thing in the news?
Well, a moment ago, we were talking about the love between Superman and Lois. People that probably don't love one another are Karine Jean-Pierre and Fox reporter Peter Ducey. I have an exchange here from yesterday's press briefing. Not a gift exchange. No. Just an exchange of
Encouraging words to each other.
Right, yeah. So Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday, she refused to call anti-Israel protesters on college campuses across America, quote, extremists, despite their anti-Semitic rhetoric, violence, and the rising fear among Jewish students. You know, this is the same White House that is quick to label anything Republican it doesn't like as extremist or MAGA or terrorist, things like that. But they're not going to apply the same principles to the people violently protesting on college campuses, taxpayer-funded college campuses. Clip one.
Does President Biden think the anti-Israel protesters in this country are extremists?
What I can say is what we've been very clear about this.
She's been
when it comes
clear.
To anti-Semitism, there's no place. We have to make sure that we speak against it very loud and be very clear about that. And let me be very clear, this is a president that has continued to have that fight in his office, in this administration. You know, when he repealed Trump's Muslim ban on his first day in office, that is something that this president did.
I've never heard nor seen of a person that is more clear. Huh? She wants you to know it.
Mm-hmm.
She's clear about every 60 seconds. She wants you to know. She wants to be very clear. And then she follows that with 60 seconds of muddy water.
Yeah.
So what is going on here, Fred?
Well, I'm going to work backwards in her comments. Where okay. She said,
I want you to be very clear.
Yes.
Would you please?
She said Trump was advocated a Muslim ban.
Yeah.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Yeah.
On that one. There was not a Muslim ban. What he did was reduce the number of immigrants from certain countries. All right? That's what he did. He did. There was no Muslim ban, so that was the lie. Here's my thoughts on her refusal. Peter Ducey's question was very, very clear. Why does the president right. not refer to these anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstrators as extremists? Very clear. Why doesn't he do that? She did not answer that question. She just said, well, he's against anti-Semitism. I was listening to a conversation yesterday between Tony Perkins and Dr. Albert Mohler, president of Southern Seminary. And they offered this explanation with regards to why the president wouldn't refer to these demonstrators as extremists. Basically, they said these extremists, these anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstrators are lefties. They are the people that the Democrats, the young people that the Democrats rely on for their support. So they don't want to call them extremists. It was really interesting in a further response from Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday. She immediately went to Charlottesville. And tried to lump that in there. No. The reason why she won't call them extremists yep. is because they depend on these people for their vote, for the Democratic vote.
If this threatens to split the Democrat Party up, maybe not 50-50, but mm-hmm. I'm telling you, a substantial minority of their party, the activists especially, they're going to fall into the pro Hamas
yes.
camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't believe Israel has a right to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, Ray, and so that presents a problem for Biden politically, domestically.
Well, look, number one, this has absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump. She's just desperate,
right?
As the Democrats are in general, to take any issue, no matter what it is, and attach Donald Trump's name to it. That's a political ploy. That's, I guess you would call it misdirection. Hey, look over here so we don't see the real issue. So, first of all, to call it a Muslim ban, it was not, Fred, as you said, but
right.
that really has nothing to do
right.
with the issue at hand. Here's the thing. They're caught in a trap here because, number one, the Jewish vote, which it tends to be very liberal, it has been heavily Democrat for a number of elections. But on the other hand, this really isn't about the Muslims. This is really about the hard left, which is anti-Israel, and deep down, it seems, anti-Semitic. And the president dare not call them out because they are part of his base. So he's caught what to do. It's a cowardly approach. I think the president would be much better advised to call these people out, even though they're, quote, on his side. I think he would gain with the American people if he'd mm-hmm. tell the truth.
Because mm-hmm. he's the American people's president, not just this group.
Right. Ray, are you being clear?
I don't yeah. problem. Okay. I'm trying.
Okay. I think you're being clear.
Yeah.
To be clear. All right. Go ahead. We want to play something here?
Yes. We actually have some audio. I got the hand signal from Fred and I had to interpret it.
he was clear.
I'm learning to speak Canadian. I've got some audio here from a Democrat in Congress who actually thinks Biden is risking his domestic agenda and support in 2024 by being as quote-unquote pro-Israel as Biden has been. It's Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal mm-hmm. from Washington State, clip 5.
We spoke to leaders in Michigan who said they were concerned that he is losing support among Arab and Palestinian citizens there because of his full-throated support in Israel.
The president needs to be just as courageous on this issue so that we keep the unity within our country for the support of the incredible things he has done. The American people are actually quite far away from where the president and even Congress, the majority of Congress, has been on Israel and Gaza. They support the right for Israel to defend itself, to exist, but they do not support a war crime exchanged for another war crime.
What is she talking about there?
Well, basically,
what is a war crime exchanged for another war crime?
Well, that is the left's definition of Israel not really having a right to defend itself against the massacre perpetrated by Hamas on October the 7th. And what it is Israel needs to stop what it's doing right now.
Right.
Because there's too many Palestinian citizens being killed.
Okay.
But as we have said so many times, what she would not dare say, Hamas uses Palestinians living in Gaza as human shields.
You know, if you just want to boil this down simply to me, Hamas murdered 1,400 Jews, Israelis, on one day.
Yes.
Israel now is going to hunt these people down who mm-hmm. did this, and they're going to eliminate them.
Yep.
And what Benjamin Netanyahu basically said yesterday, the world, those who condemn us can go jump in a lake. To use an expression, because we're going to do what we got to do, and we really don't care what you have to say. That's basically what he said yesterday.
Yeah, and he said something else interesting, too. He said, if we don't stop these terrorists
here,
the next stop is Europe. Now you better pay attention, the west of the...
What do you mean by that?
Because Hamas terrorists have also moved into Europe.
Right.
Hamas, Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, just testified a few moments ago in Washington, D.C. One of the things he worries about is a Hamas attack in this country. Now, why is he worried about that? Because he knows we have terrorists, thanks to Joe Biden's border policy, we have terrorists in this country now. We have Iranians that are crossing our southern border. In fiscal year, this fiscal year alone, we have allowed over 900,000 people from 150 different countries to enter this. In the month of October, mm-hmm. there were 23,000, I think the figure is, gotaways, they estimate, getting into this country.
What is that?
Those are people that got in without any paperwork.
Okay. The rest of them are signing up for asylum.
Yes.
Okay. They're walking up to the border agents and signing up for asylum.
Yeah, they're saying, I'm facing persecution in my country. All the Border Patrol is saying, okay, here's the date.
Come back
show
5 years.
5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, to me, what Biden has done with the border is impeachable every day, all day. I mean, I didn't think I'd ever see anything quite like this. But what Biden did with the support of Democrats – is basically he has just said there is no border.
No.
There is no border. And even liberal news outlets are reporting this right now. People are just it's astonishing that now there was some good news yesterday. Now this is after millions and millions and millions of people have come in here illegally. We don't even know who they are. And this asylum process is just insane. I would stop it. Mm-hmm. If I were president, I would just, maybe you can't constitutionally, I don't know, maybe you have to have the authority, Ray, of the Congress, I don't know, but I'm just telling you, make me king for a day, I would say no more asylum, for now.
Right.
I'm not saying permanently, forever, because America traditionally has been a welcoming place for people who have suffered political or religious persecution, for example, but this asylum laws have been so abused. We're backlogged 5-10 years, whatever it is, from these cases of people who have applied, and they're only doing that so they can get into the interior of the country with never any intention of going back for their hearing, so to speak. So it's being abused and run over. So I would say no more. We're suspending asylum for a year or 2 years or whatever until we get this all figured out. Mm-hmm. But I never thought I'd see in my lifetime millions of people come in here. We don't know who they are, where they're coming. Well, we do know where they're coming from. They're coming from all over the world. It's a cottage industry now. They fly to Mexico, and they walk over our border. But I guess I never thought I'd see the day when a president, in this case Biden, just does not give a rip about containing people coming over our borders. They don't care at all.
He's been accused by many people, not just presidential candidates, but a lot of people, as being more concerned about Ukraine's border than the southern border.
Yeah. Well, it's almost sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
You're sabotaging your own country.
Yes.
Because what's going to happen now, you have, 3, 4, or 5 million people that have come over since he's been president.
The actual count is over 6 million now.
Okay, these people are going to go, they're going into the interior of the country.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have children. The children are, and then they're going to, do they have a way to support themselves? You used to have to prove you could support yourself.
Right.
You do in Canada even today, right, Ray?
Absolutely.
Fred? Absolutely. Hey, you know what I'm talking about, Ray? When you have to prove you're not going to be a burden on the state?
100%. But look, there's no crisis on the southern border in the estimation of Joe Biden.
Right.
This is what he wanted.
Yes,
this
that's
is what
true.
This is no crisis. This is not a bug. It's a feature, as they say. Okay, this is what they wanted. And the 6 million coming in for whatever political reasons, they thought they could do it. So if you say to the press secretary, what's going on down at the border, just say, well, let me be clear. There is no crisis on the border. But
because there is no border.
Right. Thank you. That's a better way to put it. There is no border.
I've read all about it. You can go online and watch. It's every day. Mm-hmm. And the majority of people coming over are males between the ages of 15 and 30 that I can see.
Yes.
And there's no children. There are some with children in tow and so forth. But it's just astonishing. I've never seen this anywhere in the world, where a country just lets people pour in to their sovereign nation unabated. In fact, I was reading about the Border Patrol agents down there. They're basically serving as the welcome wagon.
Mm-hmm.
They're cutting barbed wire that Texas tried to put up, I think. And now, by the way, a federal judge said yesterday, if Texas wants to put up barbed wire to protect their borders, they can.
Mm-hmm. That was a Bush nominee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But anyway, they are, they're basically handing out asylum or whatever, hearing cards and saying, see you later.
Yep.
And I guess they can get on buses to go wherever they want to. It's astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
A border patrol, to me, means exactly that. You're there to control the border, and it's just amazing. The American voters, well, it's kind of almost too late to do anything. You can't. What are you going to do about the 4, 5, 6 million people who have already? They're not ever going back.
Nope.
Huh?
I would imagine the Border Patrol is going to be hurting for workers here in the not too distant future, because
they're completely demoralized.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Biden has completely demoralized them, that guy that, what's Mayorkas, is that his name?
Alejandro Mayorkas.
What is his title?
Homeland Security. He lies.
He's a joke.
Yeah.
A bad one. Huh?
Yeah.
He'll get up there tomorrow and testify somewhere. Yes, we have the border under control.
Mm-hmm.
Just, huh? Sad. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more. We're going to talk to Jenna Ellis coming up, and we're going to talk about the Reformation, because it's Reformation Day.
I'd like to take a minute and have a heart-to-heart with you. If you're able, place your hand over your heart. Can you feel it? My strong heartbeat reminds me that I'm alive. See, it's the same for an unborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception, and at just 3 weeks is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. That's where Preborn steps in, rescuing 200 babies every day from abortion simply by providing a mother with a free ultrasound and allowing her to hear her child's heartbeat and see their perfectly formed body in the womb. By 6 weeks, eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby is able to suck his or her thumb. Preborn needs our help to save these precious souls. For just $28, you could be the difference between the life or death of a baby. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. If you're a business owner, perhaps you can consider a larger donation for a write-off, because we know the government isn't working on saving babies. A donation of $1,000, $2,000, $20,000, all gifts are tax deductible and will reach eternity. Get involved today. If you're like most of us, you're paying way too much for healthcare. That's why I want to tell you about a ministry that has been meeting the healthcare needs of hundreds and thousands of Christians, and that's Christian Healthcare Ministries, chministries.org. Christian Healthcare Ministries is cost-sharing made easy. For over 40 years, this unique model has allowed believers to choose their own doctors without worrying about networks or waiting periods, since they are not insurance, but a faith-based alternative to insurance. Members not only get advantages from the affordability, flexibility, and reliability of CHM, but they also receive access to 24/7 telehealth services at no additional cost. It's no surprise that doctors across the country appreciate working with CHM, and so will you. It all starts with a visit to chministries.org/AFR. That's chministries.org/AFR. Christian Healthcare Ministries is the longest-serving health share ministry serving all 50 states. Share the good news with a friend, too. chministries.com/AFR. Make the switch today with anytime enrollment.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, Chris, and Ray, we thank you for listening to the program, as always. Well, today is Reformation Day, and some of you may say, what in the world is that? Well, it's also Halloween today, but joining us to talk about this is Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning here on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time each day. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning, and great to be back with you all, and especially today on Reformation Day.
What is Reformation Day, Jenna?
Well, this commemorates the time that Martin Luther in 1517 proposed basically an academic discussion or theological discussion of the problems that he observed in the Catholic Church. And so these are known as the 95 Theses of 1517, and his refusal basically to just go along with what the Catholic Church was teaching. And so this then ushered in the age of the Protestant Reformation, or as our good friend Pastor John MacArthur would say, you know, we are the original protesters as Protestants, to protest against what was then the Catholic Church that, of course, taught various doctrines not contained in Scripture. And so the Reformation, also in world history, we should recognize was also part of the era of the Renaissance. And a lot of secularists will point to the Renaissance as this age of enlightenment, and when we got back into as a culture recognizing art and beauty and industry, and this came out of the Middle Ages and that really dark period of a world history. But what they fail to recognize is that the Reformation was a very important part of the Renaissance because of how Christianity was spread throughout the European world at that time through the Protestant Reformation, because Martin Luther helped to translate the Bible into German, which was the standard speaking language at the time, and to actually have the Bible that you could read for yourself, not just have to trust your priest that whatever he was telling you was the Bible. That really is what led to the Age of Enlightenment or the whole Renaissance. And any time that we see a period of human flourishing, just like the American Revolution, for example, it's always predicated on the biblical worldview and getting back to sola scriptura, or the Bible alone, that is sufficient to address all of our issues as human beings. And so this was just one point in time. But the lesson for all of us today, and why I choose to personally to celebrate Reformation Day, not Halloween, is to recognize that we as Christians have an obligation to read the Bible for ourselves, understand rightly dividing truth from error, and continuing to promote sound doctrine.
Is that it? Is that all you got?
Oh, I could continue. You want me to rant more?
No, that's all right. I just figured you have 7 minutes. You just went three right there on Reformation Day. Ray, let me ask you what our dear friend here and constitutional attorney Jenna talked about. 1517 was the year that Martin Luther posted the 95 Theses on the door of Wittenberg, right? Germany, right?
The castle church in Wittenberg, Germany.
Have you been there?
No, I have not. But look, this was an epical event. And as Jenna said, it appears, I mean, you could look at it in one way, and everything Jenna said so beautifully done there, putting it in the larger context. Because in that day, it's not as if on October the 31st, 1517, Luther got up and said, okay, I'm going to change the world today. You know?
Right.
He had the 95 Theses, and the door of the church was like a community bulletin board, and he nailed it up there, challenging people to the debates and to debate these theses. And if you know, you can read them, Tim, you can read that they've been, of course, translated into English. You can read the 95 Theses, and some of it's rather arcane. It's a debate about certain doctrines that coming out of medieval Catholicism and so on. But in there is the seed. Jenna talked about sola scriptura, the Bible and the Bible alone, that it is the final, it's the supreme court for the Christian faith, not a church council, not what somebody in Rome says, but the Bible and the Bible alone is the basis of the Christian faith. And in so doing, he didn't mean to, but he struck a match that ignited a flame that spread across Europe, and the flame is still going around the world today. He took the Bible out of the hands of the clergy alone and put it in the hands of the individual man and woman and said, read it for yourself. That's an epical, world-changing event. Though I suppose, Tim, when he went to bed that night, he didn't know. He couldn't have known. But the flame is still burning all these hundreds of years later.
We're talking about Martin Luther, and today is Reformation Day, and we're talking about from the year 1517. But prior to the Reformation, the Catholic Church was the church, right? Wasn't that the only Christian church, or was there also an Eastern church?
There was an Eastern church, and there were smaller, smaller subgroups and split-offs and so on. But what we consider the evangelical movement, what it is today, there would be no evangelical movement today.
But it broke off from the Catholic Church.
Sure.
And the Catholic Church was the Christian church in the West.
Right. That's true.
If it would have been called the West by then. Anyway, anything else to add to that, Jenna?
Yeah. And, you know, it's so fascinating to see how all of these different parts move throughout history, and why it's so important for Christians not just to study theology. Of course, that is important, sola scriptura, as we're talking about, but also understand world history and the context, because about 90 years before the 95 Theses and Martin Luther was a very important part of the Renaissance, which, of course, was Gutenberg's printing press. This was also in Germany around 1440.
Yes.
And that revolutionized mass communication, and that allowed for the Reformation to truly, when the Bible was translated into German, to quickly make copies of the Bible and get that into the hands of the multitudes. And so it's very important for us as Christians, not just to study church history, but to understand world events. And my mom always called it, in homeschool, when we studied world history chronologically, his story instead of history, and how God moves throughout history and continues to reveal himself. And that's why the Renaissance is also an important part of the Reformation.
Talking to Jenna Ellis, I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson, Chris Woodward, and Ray Pritchard. Ray, one other thing about this I wanted you to respond to. Martin Luther was a monk, right?
Correct.
Okay. So he was a monk in the Catholic Church.
Right.
But he saw the abuses going on, and this is what the 95 Theses were, some of them at least, were about the abuses of the church, then he wanted the whole world to know it. He was basically calling out his bosses, right? Am I right? He was talking about the bishops and, I don't know, even the Pope at the time. Because wasn't the Catholic Church then, or the only church there in that part of the world, weren't they having a pay to play as far as getting into heaven?
The whole question of the indulgences was a big issue coming out of the Middle Ages. You know, another part of this is Martin Luther was looking for forgiveness, and he could not find it. You read his own story. He was heavily burdened with a sense of his own guilt, and it did not matter. He went to church, of course, and did the mass, of course. He followed what he thought was the proper teaching, but he had this heavy sense of guilt and heavy burden. And then he famously read, the quote from the book of Habakkuk that's repeated in Romans and in Galatians and in Hebrews, "The just will live by faith." And that set him free. Mm-hmm. That he discovered that the way to be right with God was not by, quote, good works, not by church attendance, not by penance, not by anything he could do, but by simple faith in what Jesus Christ did when he died on the cross and rose from the dead. It was a liberating truth. Jenna talked about sola scriptura. Another one of the solas of the Reformation is sola fide, made right with God on the basis of simple faith in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right. Excuse me. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, and it's kind of interesting, you know, you talk about reading back through church history. Isn't what Martin Luther did similar to the message that Jesus gave at his time when he was on this earth that got the Pharisees so upset? Because Jesus was saying, you know, the law is there, but the law has a purpose to point you to your sin and to release you from the penalty of sin to trust in me. Because the Pharisees at that time had added so much more to what even Scripture said, because it gave them power. And so Jesus was a rebel against what the Pharisees were teaching at that time, and that's why they didn't like him. Great similarities between the message that Jesus had and then what I think Martin Luther was pointing out in his time. Freedom from the law.
Is that a statement or a question, Fred?
No, I think it was.
Jenna and
it was
Ray.
Freedom from the law.
Okay, go ahead, Jenna.
Which is also the full scope of why we need to read the Old Testament and the New Testament. There are some Christian churches today that would suggest that the Old Testament is totally outdated. We don't need to even read that, which is denying sola scriptura and the inerrancy and sufficiency of the Bible. But to understand the role of the law was to evidence our need for a savior. And then after Jesus came, he did not replace or abolish the law. He fulfilled it. And that's an important distinction. And for me personally, going through law school and understanding these concepts of justification and understanding the being judge and having judgment and then having a satisfaction of judgment. You know, some of these things that are legal terms that the Apostle Paul writes about so beautifully in the book of Romans. He was a lawyer in his day and actually wrote legal terms in the book of Romans that talk about how we are justified through faith alone. And that's what Martin Luther alluded to. And so when we look back and understand the purpose of the law now, we do live in an age of grace, but we understand that the law reveals to us our need for a Savior, and then Christ came to fulfill the law, not abolish it, and we are justified through our faith in Him. And this is why we need to, as Christians, understand the entire counsel of God and read the entire counsel of God in context.
Amen. All right, well, today is Reformation Day, and we're talking about the impact that Martin Luther had on the world. In 1517, he was a Catholic monk, and he saw what he thought were perversions, not sexual, but perversions of power and authority going on, people paying money to get, you called them indulgences, is that what you called them, Ray?
Right, right.
Is that where you pay to get some of your family members into heaven?
Essentially get them out of purgatory and into heaven. And yeah, it was a kind of medieval pay for play.
Yeah.
Very.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so
politics has always happened,
yeah,
even from
yeah,
the very
that's right.
beginning.
Right. So he was pointing out this, and that's what led to the Reformation, which ultimately led to the Lutheran Church, which led, and then we have also the other branches or denominations under the Reformed umbrella or the Protestant umbrella that impacted certainly the United States and Canada and other those two countries in particular. All right. Well, Jenna, what do you got coming up tomorrow on Jenna Ellis in the Morning?
Well, we are going to continue to talk about the controversy over Speaker Mike Johnson that really shouldn't be a controversy. He is simply standing for the truth of the biblical worldview that informs his political view of civil government. So we're continuing to talk about that. We'll have some very special guests. We had Chip Roy today talking about that, and tomorrow yeah. we may have another member of Congress as well. But last thing real quick on Luther. For anyone who's interested, there is a really good film. I would recommend my church in Colorado actually showed this at their church. I don't know what it's rated, so you know, take that with a grain of salt. But if you want kind of a dramatized view, maybe for a youth group or something like that, there's a movie called Luther from 2003 that Joseph Fiennes is the main actor, and it actually is a really good portrayal of Luther. So I'm going to be watching that tonight. That's how I always celebrate Reformation Day with my family, and so for what it's worth, you know, again, I don't know, and I'll full disclosure, I don't know the rating on it. It's probably for just because of the content for a little bit more mature audience, but it's a very good. Okay, there you go. So it's in my view, a very good portrayal of Luther in his life.
Yeah, but it's not PG-13 because of
right
profanity or violence or.
Oh, I'm sure they had some kind of persnickety issue.
To take it in context, The Essential Church, the movie that documents the Grace Community Church, is also rated PG-13 because of, quote, mature elements in the film, which is talking about Christian martyrs. Yeah. So, you know,
all right. Yeah.
There's that.
But anyway, well, listen, Jenna, thanks so much. Have a great day, and we'll look forward to hearing you tomorrow on the AFR Network. Thanks.
Always great to be on in the morning. Thanks.
All right. That's Jenna Ellis joining us. Fred, any?
Well, just she alluded to Mike Johnson. We haven't talked about that yet. Mike Johnson's the new Speaker of the House. And he is out there today.
He's a right-wing Christian wacko.
There you go. Well, that's what the media says.
Probably more than me.
Yeah. But he,
and I am one.
He is out there with a big challenge today. You know, the White House and the Democrats have got this proposal, $105 billion proposal, aid for Israel, but they're lumping in with it over $60 billion more for Ukraine and another $14 billion, they say, for border security. Actually, it's to hire more Border Patrol people to do the paperwork.
It's to bail out sanctuary cities, too, I think.
Yes, yeah. That's part of it. And what Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, wants to do, he's saying, no. We want to consider the aid for Israel, which is, I think, is about $14.5 billion. We want to consider that standalone, because there is a debate about how much more money we're going to give Ukraine. We want a clean bill, $14.5 billion for Israel, all right? No strings attached. But he has added something to that. He says, I don't want to borrow more money for this. I want to take that $14.5 billion from the IRS, which you may remember got tens of billions of dollars. Joe Biden wants to give them tens of billions of dollars to hire more IRS agents. So Mike Johnson is saying, and he's got a lot of the House members behind him, I want to stand alone. I want to take the money from the IRS pot of money, and I want to give that to Israel.
Do you have a clip on this?
We do. It is clip 8, Mr. Brent.
How is it going to be paid for?
We're going to be releasing that here shortly, but my intention and my desire in the first draft of this bill is to take some of the money that has been set aside for the IRS, building and bulking up the IRS right now. They have about $67 billion in that fund, and we'll try to take the $14.5 necessary for this immediate and urgent need. We'll deal with the rest of that issue later.
Pardon me. Okay. Excuse me. All right, so I'll just simplify this for folks. I'm a simple man. There was a song written about me many years ago by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Not the Carpenters.
No, not the Carpenters. Simple Man.
Yeah. I've heard that one.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, Speaker Johnson is doing there, and I don't know why Kevin McCarthy didn't do this. This is one of the reasons Kevin McCarthy is not Speaker of the House any longer. What he's saying is, all right, listen, if we're going to vote on these big monstrosities of money, if money can be monstrosities, we're going to segment them out. We're not lumping everything together here and letting the people get away with saying, well, I didn't want to vote against that, but I had to in order to get that. That's the game these congressmen and senators have played forever.
Yes.
And it's tried to be ended before. I remember Paul Ryan tried to get back to what they call regular order.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
When he became Speaker. Others have tried, but soon they fall victim to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whether Mike Johnson falls victim to the system, so to speak, remains to be seen. Because I've seen strong men go,
yes,
huh?
Mm-hmm.
Go down to the swamp, to the system.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's saying here, I completely and totally agree with, is we're going to vote separately on funding for the Ukraine. Yes or no? Raise your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it in simple terms here. How about, and then we're going to move on. We're going to vote for Israel. How many people want to give Israel this much money? Yes or no? Raise your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then third, what Democrats are going to call this is border security. is that what they're calling it? What are they calling it?
Border security.
Are they liars?
Yes, they are.
If we wanted border security, you could do it today.
Yes.
They don't want border security. They're only saying that so hopefully they'll have some Republicans vote for them and they can fool the public.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read the whole bill, but I know that a couple weeks ago they were saying this is bailout money for sanctuary cities is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to name it something else so that it doesn't attract there. Is that what you're smiling at?
No, I'm smiling at it because on the Department of Homeland Security's website, specifically the webpage for border security, the DHS defines border security as protecting our borders from the illegal movement of weapons, drugs, contraband, and people.
Yeah, it's that. So I would say, so I like what Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is doing right here. He's saying, no, we're going to vote for these separately.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can vote their conscience, vote how they think is the right thing to do, and then the voters who select those people can know where they stand, and they can't get by with lumping them all together, and then they say, hey, you know, I'd have voted against money for Ukraine, but I couldn't help it. They put it in there with the money for Israel. You see how this works?
Mm-hmm.
It's a game they play.
Yes.
And Republicans play it, and Democrats play it, I think what Speaker Johnson is saying is great. He said, no, we're going to vote for these things individually.
Yes.
And let me ask you this. So I don't think they should give a dime to border security.
Not as it's defined.
No. No, we already, you've decimated it.
Yes.
We don't need any more money. We've had money for border security. Until you stop them, Biden, mm-hmm. from letting them come in by the millions unabated, then we're not giving you any money for border security.
That's right.
Because I know how it's going to be used. You know what it's going to be used for?
Uh-huh.
He's going to send it to New York City. He's going to send it to Chicago, and he's going to send it to Los Angeles and Denver. And he's going to say, here's the money for you guys taking in all the illegals that you keep claiming about that's being a drain on your city's coffers.
Yes.
I'm helping you out here. So that's what this money will be used for if he's able to get away with it. I'm talking about the what they're calling border security money.
Mm-hmm.
So, another thing is here, what I like what Speaker Johnson is doing thus far is he is saying if we're going to spend money, then we're going to offset it with cuts somewhere.
Yes.
No more just printing money and sending it around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, this is going to be interesting to see if he can hold up to this, okay? As I've said here, I love Mike Johnson. I believe in him as far as his, background, and he is a strong constitutional conservative believer. But I've seen men like him go down before in terms of yielding to the system and what they're going to want to do here, whether he can hold up to it or not. But he's saying we're going to send $15 billion or whatever it is to Ukraine. You're going to vote for that? Tell me where we're going to get that from.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is, I guess he's talking about Israel money. But he may be talking about Ukraine money, too. We're going to get that from the IRS.
Yep.
The money designated for another federal agency, the IRS.
Yes.
That's what he's saying, right?
He's saying the IRS has a pot of money right now, which hasn't been spent, over $60 billion.
Right.
He says, so 14.3, I think it is for Israel, 14.3. We're going to take it from that pot. We don't want to borrow more money that we don't have.
Yeah. Anyway, so I like what he's doing here. We're separating these big money, these big ticket items, and we're going to vote on them individually and separately. Right?
But unfortunately, there are Republicans in the Senate, including Mitch McConnell, who want to lump everything together.
Well, he needs to say no.
Yeah, just say no.
Speaker Mike Johnson needs to say no, not going to do that. The appropriations, according to the Constitution, for the federal government starts in the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to lump everything together.
Yep.
Furthermore, I'd want to know, Mitch McConnell, for example, why do you want to lump everything together? Why do you care whether we vote on these things separately?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.